Welcome to another episode of the Indian Cycling Podcast, brought to you by The Bike Affair. This is your host, Harsha. A book on cycling in India has just been launched called Escape Velocity. Our guests today are the authors of the book, Raman Garimella and, surprise, surprise, Gokul Krishna. Yes, it's my co-host. You guessed it right.
Thanks, Harsha. I can't tell you how pleased I am to be the guest on my own podcast. So it's a strange feeling, and I'm very happy to be a guest as well as happy to be an author for the first time. Raman is a very good friend, and I've known him for the last 8 years. Welcome to the show, Raman.
Oh, thanks, guys. I also feel quite special because it's the first time I'm going on a podcast as a guest, and I never thought I would say these words that I'm going on a podcast to promote my book. So I do feel very special indeed. Thanks for the invitation.
We have had many relationships in the sense that we have been colleagues at the Bike Affair. We have been co-riders. He used to train under Maxwell Sir, and at that time I also used to join him for a few rides. I have been part of his support staff at one of the nationals in Bihar, and now we are co-authors. He is significantly younger to me, but he shoulders maturity which is far beyond his age, and whenever I interact with him, many times I forget how young he is. He's a multifaceted person. He plays significantly many roles with ease. I will let him explain the various roles he has done, played himself, because he'll be able to tell a much better story.
Yeah, and you forgot to mention that you've also been my employer on, you know, several occasions, sometimes as when I was a volunteer, or when I was a bike mechanic at the store, or I would even handle rides sometimes. I even wrote some content for the blog. So I just want to say, drop some appreciative words for Gokul. I think it's a total pleasure working with you. You bring an honesty and sincerity to whatever you do, and it's very nice to see. And I'm sure whoever's worked with you says the same things. And I'm also happy that apart from being riding partners and like all the other roles you mentioned, apart from that, I'm glad that we brought out this book. This is like a book child that we have from so many years of knowing each other. I can't even remember the first time we met, probably 2010. So it's been around 8 or 9 years.
Yes, definitely. Because when we rode the Tour of Nilgiris together in 2011, we had known each other very well. So in terms of date, that is one thing I remember. But if you go and check our records, probably we'll also be able to figure out when did you work at Bike Affair. So, but I don't remember that.
Yeah. And some of my fondest memories of cycling and Hyderabad is coming to the store and just chilling. You know, there was no agenda. Sometimes they would just come. I would maybe come to get something fixed or to discuss an idea, and then just end up staying 4 or 5 hours. Or if there was a race coming on, I remember how you screened the last few hours of Paris-Roubaix or the last few hours of any stage of the Tour de France. That is very nice memories in the store. Cool. And I've seen all locations, so I'm quite proud to be associated that long with you.
You have had a very interesting journey centered around cycling, if I may say so, and you were quite a pioneer in terms of trying out new things. So I'm sure many of our listeners would be very encouraged to hear those things. So why don't you walk us through your journey?
Yeah. So when I was growing up, I was always an outdoor kid. So I just want to say that being an athlete, I'm sure every boy dreams about it. I mean, I'm sure you guys have also, you may have dreamed about playing cricket for India. That was a big dream of mine. Then it became, I wanted to be a football player for Arsenal Football Club. And so being an athlete, or at least giving it a shot, was an aspiration from a very young age. But as you know, I come from a very normal family where nobody was in sports. Normal South Indian middle-class family, nobody was in sports, not even recreationally. So yeah, they said, you can do whatever you want once you finish engineering. So that's what I did. I did engineering. I got a job with a campus placement with a big bank. I didn't really feel it was a good fit. So, and incidentally, at that time, I was doing cycling as a hobby. I joined the local cycling club in Hyderabad, and you know, it started off with weekend rides, with setting distance goals, and I had a lot of fun with the community there. And then at a certain point, I decided this seems like a lot of fun. Why don't I give it a shot? And anyway, my family said they would support me if I ever wanted to try anything after engineering. So I'll take them up on the offer. That's how cycling happened. And I gave it a shot for 3 or 4 years. I also had, if you can believe it or not, I had a lot of free time while I was cycling, because I wasn't training from 9 to 5. I was training in the morning or in the evening. So that left a lot of the day free. I did several part-time jobs, some absurd ones. Like, I used to write descriptions for food items on an e-commerce site, on namkeens and sweets, for example. I was even helped my friend organize some bodybuilding competitions in Secunderabad. Then I started picking more cycling-related things. I would organize races. I would volunteer for races. And in some way, I was really proud of the fact that I was involved in building the community, directly and indirectly. So, yeah, some of my fondest memories came from volunteering for Breviers. I was also part of the organizing for the Airtel Hyderabad Marathon. Then we started Hyderabad Racing League, which is called something else now. So that's all the little side part-time gigs I did. Then I decided to study sports science. And I think when, as an adult, or yeah, when you voluntarily chose to study something, you don't dread schoolwork or classroom anymore. And that's exactly what happened. I researched for 1 year on what kind of courses are out there. I chose a course in Germany. Then I moved to Europe 5 years ago to do a master's course in sports science. Then one thing led to another. I was doing internships around Europe, and I'm finally landed in Belgium, which is one of the greatest hubs for road cycling. And I'm very fortunate to be here. My work currently involves, I work with a design and engineering firm who has significant clients in performance sports. And one of those sports is cycling. So my work, I'm doing a PhD on human modeling, 3D human models, and the 3D shapes of human beings and how to make them more accurate. And one of the applications of this work is, can you put a rider or a 3D shape of a rider in a virtual wind tunnel? And can you do aerodynamic analysis or drag analysis? And that's one of the applications of my work, just to tie it back together with cycling.
That's fantastic. You didn't tell about your top 10 All India ranking in Sudoku, Raman.
Oh, yeah. So Sudoku was another chapter. I was quite deep into it. I was part of the community there as well. I would... like anybody, I started with the Sudokus in the newspaper, then got more and more deep. And I think this is credit to the internet. I think our generation owes so much to the internet, where these are keywords you could just search. And eventually I was part of the organizing for the World Sudoku Championship back in Goa when I was studying in Goa. Then I would even try out for the Indian team. I got selected for the Indian team once. I didn't fly because it was... I was not sponsored then, so I would have had to fly to Croatia or wherever it was that time. So yeah, Sudoku, thanks for reminding me. It's been a while since I last did a puzzle.
And you also taught Sudoku in schools, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's another side, absurd or not absurd, but I really enjoyed it. But an offbeat side job I had. So one of my friends, he was running, his family was running a chain of schools, and I used to go around to those schools teaching kids Sudoku. And that was quite a challenge. Can you imagine teaching kids Sudoku? Now when I think about it, it sounds like a different person that did it.
Yeah, we both know how difficult it is to teach kids.
I
just want to say that when parents say, you know, finish your engineering and then you can do whatever you want, it's actually like a very bald-faced conspiracy, you know?
Right.
No, for a fact that once you finish your engineering, like you are so far down the road on something that you probably won't think about it. So it was probably a surprise when, you know, your parents said, oh, this guy actually remembered this stuff.
So. No, you, what helps is I threw a tantrum. So that really helps. But you're so right. It wasn't easy either. It wasn't as easy as one conversation. It was quite a challenge. And if not family, extended family or friends or something, somebody or the other will remind you that, hey, remember you did engineering? What was that about? What was the point of that? Don't you think there's more money, more comfort in that? What are you? Or fine, you're doing cycling. Where are you going with this? What do you want to achieve? How long do you think this will last? And I didn't know the answers to many of them, but it was quite a challenge dealing with those questions. And obviously, you see your own friends and peers who have these fancy MBA jobs and who are going to, you know, Silicon Valley or Wall Street and all these places where you become so cash rich and so comfortable in life that early. And it does get to me. And I must say kudos to all the people who started off with me and didn't sort of cop out. They're still in the game. And I really, really respect that, how they're going on and achieving great things. Like some of them have been on your podcast as well. And I remember these guys, we were, you know, rubbing shoulders in TFN or rubbing shoulders in BBCH races, Hyderabad races. Yeah, so it does feel, I feel like they had something that I didn't. They had, they knew that this is a long game and this is not just something you try out because it was a childhood dream. And they have the discipline it takes. I really respect that.
The other thing is, it's also a very difficult thing to explain a passion to someone who is not into that passion, right? I mean, I remember explaining to someone about writing novels, and they said, oh, so why don't you take 2 years off and maybe at the end you'll win the Booker Prize? And I was like, no, it's not how it works.
Yeah,
we live in a world of instant gratification.
Yeah. I was like, people win Booker Prize after like 40 years of writing. That's not what happens.
Yeah. And even just the strike rate of how many people, right?
Strike rate is abysmally low. So,
One of the things that I observed and I really admire in Raman's career path, especially around cycling and further cycling as a sport and further, is I think because of this responsibility that he took, you could see that he went all out. Because racing, when he did that 7-8 years ago, was far more difficult than what it is now. Because I have been around for these 7-8 years, so I know what kind of opportunities have emerged and the knowledge and the acceptance of the society and so on. So, in fact, one of the key things that Raman contributed to was Maxwell Sir had actually kind of taken a sabbatical from coaching. And I think Raman and Shetty, his classmates who used to train together, they were persistent. And of course, Shetty doesn't talk at all. So it's primarily Raman. So I even now, whenever I speak to Maxwell Sir about this, he says that he used to test these guys and see how many times they used to come back and see whether they are really committed to, they had what it takes. So he went through that process. And similarly, like what he said with regards to, and then even the process of going through the training, the coaching, he used to approach the coaching in a very, very systematic and a very scientific way. I remember how much care he used to take about his nutrition, and because I was his colleague also, I knew how he would take care of himself, his body, and his food habits were so disciplined around that time. And I think because the decision was his, he also ensured that he gave it his all, and went beyond what is on the surface, you know, really thoroughly exploited or examined everything possible to be done. And similarly, post that phase, when he was again in no man's land, the fact that he found out about this course and then his emergence, nobody could have really thought at that time that he will be where he is right now. But the fact that he was, he took it upon himself to be associated in this field and you know, explore the possibilities available in studies and career-wise. I'm sure, in fact, he used to discuss with me what are the few of the career options he had and what he would like and what he wouldn't like to do. So I think that the responsibility he got actually enabled him to be as successful as he is right now.
Thanks, Gokul. That's a lot of kind words. I wanted to add that, in fact, it was not at all easy. We had to figure out so much ourselves, me and Shetty, sometimes me and you, or even with Maxwell, sir. I mean, you know how frustrating it can be dealing with government authorities. We had to go through that. Then I was looking out for sponsors. So I was playing that role myself of putting together a marketing brochure and going to individuals or companies. Now I think, you know, if I had started at age 16 or when I was in school, I'm sure my family would be around me, or there would be at least a one or two member team who would take care of all those things for me, you know, communicating with interested parties for sponsoring, communicating with the coach, maybe even a social media team, who knows these things, how these things work today. But yeah, you know, I also feel if I have played even a little part in how racing is today in India, and I'm sure I have indirectly somehow, even things like, I remember you asked for my sponsorship brochure a few years ago for somebody who you knew, a rider that you knew as a template. And even if it means we got Maxwell sir out of like a Chakte India Kabir Khan kind of story, and if I played a part in bringing Maxwell sir back, that's very satisfying to know. And there really is value in being the first, because at that time I really didn't know anybody who was as dramatic as me in quitting a job and chasing cycling or racing as an option. And even if I haven't borne all the fruits, but I know that there's my footprint somewhere, that's enough, actually. That feels really nice.
Your marketing brochure is the standard template, no? Free template available for all the cyclists. I've shared it with so many people. I've worked with so many people to create their marketing or their proposals to get sponsorship. I don't know, a countless number of people have used your marketing deck.
But, yeah.
And nobody's was as good as yours still.
Oh, wow. I hired a professional for it, so.
Yeah, okay.
So whose idea was it to write this book?
I think it was Raman's idea, but I may change my opinion if it becomes a bestseller.
So, Raman, why did you think about writing this book? And can you tell us a little bit about this book?
Okay. So, first of all, I feel like, you know, they say the longer you spend in an industry or in a field, it makes less and less sense over time to leave that field, because you've invested so much and you've gained so much accumulated knowledge or gyan, let's say. So why would you let go? And that's where it starts, I think, because we have so much, you know, useless and useful gyan in our heads. Why don't we document it and put it to some use? I remember when I was cycling it, even today, some of my friends come to me. One of the most annoying questions I get is, so I want to start cycling, which bike should I buy? And they're looking for a one-word answer, which I can't, because I know too much to be just giving one-word answers now. And now I can say, hey, why don't you read this? Or I used to say, okay, why don't you read this, you know, Bike Zone forum. That was the link that I would share the most, Bike Zone. I can't remember. I don't remember the name, something with V. Right. So I really admired that it was just 3 pages of all the, you know, cycling for dummies questions, and it answered every question that a beginner might have. So I want to say this is building on that. And I didn't have, let's say, I didn't have the escape velocity to do it by myself. And I thought, who better to approach to collaborate this with than Gokul? Because Gokul answers these annoying questions day in and day out. Only difference is that's part of his job. So he has far more insights than I would have. Like I said, because you spent so many years accumulating this, you feel like you're in a position to somehow give back. And if I had to speak personally, cycling is sometimes it's like a heavy chapter. So it's like all or nothing for me. Like I haven't raced in God knows, like 3 or 4 years, I haven't entered a race. So for me, it's either race all the time or don't race at all. So it's that kind of heavy feeling around cycling. And this book kind of helps bring closure to that, you know, because that's how I started as a beginner. And this is exactly the kind of book that I wish was around when I started. But I'm not trying to say that this is the only book that a beginner should read. I would still obviously encourage people to buy as many books and get as many opinions as possible. Now more than ever, there's more information, especially through different media, not just text. So, yeah, but yes, it's important to decide for a beginner who wants to get into cycling, to understand cycling right from the basics. It's important to decide which content is meaningful and which is not. And hopefully our book is on the right side of that filter. So that's where the idea of the book came from.
So I think one of the conceit of the internet, if you will, is basically information overload. Mm-hmm. Right? I remember 2 years ago going to the bike affair, and this was based completely on hearsay. Someone just told me, just go there. Mm-hmm. They know what you want. And mm-hmm. I went there and I was just so overwhelmed, you know, like, there is a hybrid, there is a road bike, there is a fixie. And then they say, okay, what is it that you really want? And you're kind of figuring out, okay, what do I really want? And, you know, it's really when you are starting, you have such little knowledge and you just go on the internet and you search for it. And there are like hundreds of links, hundreds of forums. And you just wish someone could tell you, no, do this. Or someone gives you like 2 or 3 options and says, just pick from only these 3 options. Don't think there is anything else. And since there is, I didn't really know Gokul and Krish back then that well, and they tried to explain this part to me, but I didn't take that advice. And eventually it became this lowest common denominator type decision where, okay, let us say I invest X amount of money and I get a certain bike. What is the amount of money that I'm willing to lose on this? Because it's also possible that everyone has a tendency to start something and then not follow through on it, right? Whether it's, you know, whether it's cycling or whether it's, you know, famously learning guitar is apparently like that. And, you know, open source projects, for example, are littered with stuff that started and then didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, so it becomes that decision, like how much money am I willing to lose on this? At that point, maybe if this book was around and someone just handed it to me, I probably would have really liked it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we wish we had something like that as well. The funny thing is, I don't think many people know this. We started the store in 2009, August. And I myself picked up in July of that year a Hercules full suspension, 3,000 rupees, 6-speed gear bike. So the kind of bike which we day in and day out tell people don't buy.
Yeah.
This was just before we went through this process and before we started the store and we learned our lessons ourselves. So many of these things are self learnings and things which we wish we had known or which we had been guided about. So
Yeah, you're right about information overload, but even I'm sure there are purchases that even Gokul regrets in terms of guides or sometimes even people. You know, you might meet a cyclist and you start modeling yourself around their journey of cycling, but you might soon, you know, realize this is not going to work for me. This may have worked for them. So yeah, there is information overload, and that's an essential part of learning, I feel. The fact that you might buy or you might invest in 5 or 6 different sources, knowing that not all sources will work for you. Yeah, but I think our strike rate again was really low, because there was not, like, for example, if I wanted to be a cricket player, it is very obvious what to do. You just go to the cricket academy nearest to you, or go to the cricket academy that's most famous or most glamorous. And those steps are clear, but with cycling, there's a lot of trial and error, hit and miss kind of thing. So I don't think you guys should feel bad about buying your first bikes, because if you hadn't bought that first bike, you know, you wouldn't buy your second bike or your, as in Gokul's case, 15th bike, is it?
Yeah.
My first bike was Hercules Act 110S. Yeah. Oh, yeah. ACT. Yeah.
So I read the book, and it's really a how-to guide to start cycling. The kind of book that, like we talked about, if it was handed to me 2 years ago when I was a total noob to cycling, then it would have been like a godsend. Not that I actually know a lot today, but, you know, certainly more than what I did back then.
Yeah, so the book is called Escape Velocity, the Definitive Desi Guide to Cycling. It is intended for anybody who is exploring cycling, who is even considering whether they should take up cycling, who has just started cycling, or even those who have been cycling around for a while. And in fact, we have 3 core chapters of the book, which are exactly those 3 aspects. So, in order to kind of reduce the information overload, the book is designed in such a way that you could actually jump into the chapter which you think is most relevant to you. So that way, it'll whichever stage you are in, you will be able to find quick answer.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfectly how it is. I mean, the fact that there are 3 stages, you could be anywhere in those 3 stages. It's the first chapter is before you ever set foot in a bike shop, basically. The second chapter is, okay, you bought a bike, or someone gave you a bike, or you've ended up with the bike. What do you do? Figuring out how it works, just breaking down what every part of the bike does, what kind of accessories to buy, how to get ready for a ride. Because let's say if I was in my first year of cycling, and you took me to a pro cyclist's house or an experienced cyclist house, or a garage, and if I saw a trainer and a chain tool or a heart rate strap or a mini pump, I would not understand what these things were. I mean, I wouldn't even know that some of these things could be, you know, storing data, for example. So this is kind of a breakdown on navigating. It's a navigation manual for all the hardware, let's say, and just before getting on your first ride, getting on, you know, the first few rides, what kind of issues or niggles or teething problems that inevitably everybody experiences, and hopefully fast-tracking your way through them. That's what the second chapter is about. And the third chapter is taking it to the next level, where, you know, where clearly the rider is committed to riding. They're hooked, let's say, to riding at least 3, you know, 2 to 4 times a week. And where do they go from there? What kind of goals can they set? How do they get more out of cycling, where it's beyond just a side project? Beyond, you know, you bought your guitar and now you're playing songs. Where can you go to play live?
So speaking about playing live, we have to talk about the master of the hour ride, Victor Kong, who wrote the foreword for the book, which was something Gokul didn't tell me. And I started reading the book and I thought, wait, why is Victor Kampmann's name here? So you got you got the foreword from someone who is not just very much in the news, but also effectively holds a big record now. I just want to ask the most important question here. Is he a fan of the podcast?
Yeah, he's a fan of the Dutch version of this podcast. He listens to it every week. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, right? I mean, think of, because Gokul, we start the book with explaining what a bike is. You know, it's a two-wheel vehicle that used to transport people and goods sometimes. And it's also, it also serves as a test of human ability. And the hour record is such a curious thing for people in cycling and fans of cycling, that how much, how far can you take technology and the human and the combination? How far can you take it? How much can a man or a woman ride in 1 hour? What is the limit? There are great men, great men have attempted it and said, never again. This is the hardest thing I've done on a bike. And here's this guy, 27-year-old Victor Kampenaerts, who's broken the hour record. And Sir Bradley Wiggins has held it for 4 years before him. So it's not a mean feat that he did. And you're right, we don't talk about it enough that he's written a foreword. This is a great man we're talking about. And how I got to know him through work. I do meet pro cyclists now and then. Got to know him through work. He's from Antwerp. I also live in Antwerp. And a colleague also happens to be good friends with his family. And I told him about, you know, where I come from. And he was surprised that India has a cycling scene. And he was curious, started asking questions. And then I told him about the book idea. So this was a long time ago when we first had the idea, Gokul and me. Then I asked him if he would, you know, like to support us by writing the foreword. And he readily agreed. He was really, really gracious about it. And I want to add that he's a thorough gentleman. So that's the story of getting Victor Kampenaerts. He said, I really, really like the idea, so I will support it. Yeah.
Okay, so you said something there which caught my attention, which was that you meet a lot of pro cyclists. Can you just do some name dropping now? Can you just
I'm a huge fan of I'm a fanboy, let's say. So I go to these Eurobike. I go every year. In fact, this year I'm going as a speaker. So when I go to Eurobike, generally there's these big brands. They would bring some, you know, their main brand ambassador. There will be a few hours of the day where there's a meet and greet. So I remember the first one I ever met was Cadel Evans. And I made such a fool of myself by jumping around him. Tom Dumoulin, Simon Geschke. These are all from the meet and greet things. The GCN guys I met. Then Greg Van Avermaet, so Beo Racer brand ambassador. Beo Racer is Belgian again. And at work, so we co-founded a wind tunnel. So I happened to meet Nicky Terpstra a few days after he won the Tour of Flanders. And I was also in the Velodrome when he finished on the podium at Paris-Roubaix. And that was very unreal, where on one weekend, I saw him win close to the finish. The weekend after, he comes in, you know, third Paris-Roubaix. And the Wednesday, I just see him at the wind tunnel. That is really incredible. That kind of, and I think cycling is that kind of sport where there's no bodyguard culture. You know, it's a very intimate sport. Even if you go to a race, you can walk among bike team mechanics, the team buses. Very close culture of interaction, which is nice. I think there's not a lot of pretense. Nice to see that. Yeah. So is that enough name dropping?
Well, I was kind of hoping for Peter Sagan.
So. Oh, that would make my year, I think, if at all someday. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a soundbite worth getting.
Yeah, yeah, but does he have haters anywhere? Because universally he's loved. Every country, every nationality, doesn't matter, loyal. Everybody loves Peter Sagan.
Yeah, I especially love him because yesterday I saw a video of him photobombing the Team Ineos victory parade. So these guys were having champagne on the ride, and they were sort of posing for photos while riding. And in the back, you saw this guy in a green jersey who was sort of waving his hands. And it turned out to be Peter Sagan.
In a lot of interviews, he says, if you're not having fun, what are you doing? You know, and that's so true. Whatever you do, you should just have fun. And he embodies that whichever country or race he goes to. I hope it's not just an act. I hope he really lives that.
Yeah, so some of his interviews, have you heard of that, seen that interview of The Dog Will Explode?
No.
You should see that. I mean, he's some character. Yeah, he's universally loved, you're right.
So,
yeah.
So we talked
rock star.
So you were talking about how the human, you sort of do 3D modeling of human body on a bike. So, mm-hmm. So to take it in a slightly different direction, who do you think looks best or has that perfect posture on a bike? Because a lot of people ride well, even Chris Froome can ride well, but he doesn't look good while riding. I can think of Nairo Quintana, who also again rides well, but looking at him, you can't really say that, right? So you, from us, looking at it from a scientific perspective, who do you think looks perfect on a bike? Their posture, their shape?
Oh, I can tell you from a fan perspective, and some of these references are not so current. I really used to like Contador and how he would have these long spells out of the saddle. There are some training videos of him where he's out of the saddle for minutes on end, just looking so fluid and graceful. I'm a fan of that. Bradley Wiggins had, I think it was a collaboration with Rafa, where he's talking about attaining perfection. And the whole focus is his form, his cycling form, and how he knows just from the first pedal stroke, he knows how his day is going to be. And that's a really, you know, it's a sort of meditative, very almost philosophical talk. So I like these two. Peter Sagan I like, of course, because he's very recognizable. And at the other end of the spectrum, I think Chris Froome's riding style is slated quite a lot. He's not the most attractive. But speaking of Chris Froome, one of the examples that we use was a few years ago when he came up with his, when he was going downhill and he came up with his Froome position. That was quite talked about in the aerodynamics world. Scientifically, I don't know. I mean, that's not what I do at work, but what does tend to happen is whoever is the winner or whoever is the hottest time trialist gets talked about a lot. So I would say, I think time trialists spend the most effort in minimizing drag, and they go to real extremes to make sure no stone is left unturned. Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I remember last week you were mentioning that Victor is very popular or very famous for having a near flat back on top of.
Yeah. That's true. He has a horizontal back, and let me see if we can in the show notes add some images of him riding his bike in Mexico.
Yeah.
I'll also share the Chris Froome thing I was talking about.
Yeah, and in fact, I remember in the early days, Sufferfest used to have a bonus video called "The Elements of Style," and that's a fantastic video to watch and ride along with. And definitely, I remember Contador was there in that. I mean, okay. There's nobody who is more beautiful out of the saddle than Contador.
Yeah. Oh, I also met him at a meet and greet. Wow. He met Ivan Basso. Yeah. Maybe we should add these in the show notes, my picture with all these. Me as a fanboy.
Yeah.
No, I was joking.
No, it's the age of self-promotion. You should just say it's there, whether you share it or not.
Yeah. If, No, yeah. So speaking of Shetty, you dropped Shetty's name, right?
Yeah.
Aditya Shetty. So just to introduce him in short, I know him from college. We studied together in Goa. We also used to be part of the same football team. And then he moved to Hyderabad. And Hyderabad is my hometown. I was living there at that time. And he also got into cycling. In fact, his first ever proper ride was a race, I think, that you guys organized. So we spent a solid 2-3 years together training and racing. We would also obsess a lot about looking good on the bike. If you remember, you know, he's thinking about which part of the legs to shave first, what to do on the bike so everything looks good, how to pose for pictures and things like that. Obviously, we did a horrible job of it, but we used to do something we thought about a lot as 22, 23-year-olds.
I mean, I don't have any memory of hearing Shetty speak.
Yeah, actually, another job that I could have had if Shetty had stayed in racing, I could have been his agent because I did everything for him. I did all the planning. I used to drive him around. I used to talk to people, organize stuff. He would not speak to anybody. You're so right. If you were going to Chennai for a race, he just knew that, oh, Raman will do it. Raman is supposed to do it. He's going to organize, you know, where to stay, how far away from the start point, how are we going to drive. If he needs money, I'll give him money. Yeah. So he was the first cycling superstar I was close to.
Okay, so let's talk about the book again. So which sections did you guys like writing the most?
I enjoyed writing the training plan because I have read so many training plans at so many places, and it was a pleasure for me to write a training plan as part of a publication which is going to be available for people to consume. So that was very satisfying, I think. And similarly, creating a list of the movies and the books we liked was also bringing back a lot of memories. In fact, last week I was riding Raman's bike on at some of the cobbles of Paris-Roubaix, and you wouldn't believe I was smashed that day, and I still came back and I fully saw a Sunday in Hell that night. So I think creating the list of movies was also very nostalgic, and a lot of good memories came back to me. So I really enjoyed doing that as well. What about you, Raman?
I liked the part where, so a friend of mine gave us feedback on the book. When I told him we're coming out with this book, he said, I hope you're writing personal stories. I hope you're writing some anecdotes which from all your years of cycling in Hyderabad. And I said, no, we don't have that. And so then Gokul and I thought, okay, that is the most obvious thing to feature, because honestly, the anecdotes are part of what makes the book personal. And all the anecdotes are based on peculiarities or characteristics of cycling in India. So why wouldn't we feature it? So immediately we wrote a few stories down, and that was the most fun. Also because the rest of the book is very logical flow based, and you're thinking about what is the best way to write this gyan, and what is the best sense, how does it make sense in terms of flow. But so this writing stories or anecdotes was like a free flowing conversational prose, which gives, even to us, it gave a good break from writing down a manual or reference kind of text. In fact, that could be the next book idea, no, Gokul? We just collect stories from us, our cycling, and from all the people we know, like Shetty and all these names we talked about.
Yeah, why not?
I think what cycling, for example, could use is very local heroes. We kind of have them, but we don't really talk about them the way, I think cricket still has that, you know, like people still talk about Jai Simha being a great player for Hyderabad. You know, like most people in India wouldn't know Jai Simha, but we do. And, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, maybe cycling, especially in a country like India, could use that, where you can have a local hero who is written about, maybe was forgotten at one point. We tried to talk about, for example, Maxwell Traverser, who I personally didn't know, but once I started knowing about him, I thought he had that kind of a story and that kind of a personality that was just, you know, something you just don't see in most walks of life.
Yeah, I think it was it you, Gokul, who gave the anecdote of Senna, the F1 driver, and he was asked by someone, who's the toughest opponent you ever faced? And you immediately think, oh, he's going to name, you know, some of the most illustrious riders the world has seen, the drivers the world has seen. But he says, it's my uncle. And his uncle is a nobody. But the thing is, when he was a kid, his uncle was his toughest opponent. His uncle was someone he looked up to, and he was local. So I also have, you know, stories like that. For me, Shetty, for example, will be one of the best riders that I've raced against, or Jetaram, or even someone like Richard or Sunil. When I first started, they seemed so many, you know, they seemed mountains away from me. So they will always hold that special place. I don't know if that's what you meant, Harsha, by local heroes.
Yeah, exactly. Because I watched Jetaram race a few weeks ago, and it was kind of a revelation to talk to him, because he was really down to earth, and also down to earth in a very earthy sort of way. You know, I mean, he is from North India, so there is that general old world decency that comes with that. But when he rode, he was, no less than anyone in terms of pushing the race. I think it was because we saw him towards the end break away from Naveen John and everyone else. Of course, there were various reasons why he could do that, but it was sort of a contrast to me, because I spoke to him before the race and I thought, okay, this is a really nice guy, but so that nice guy sort of had this persona inside him which was really competitive.
Yeah, and that too, that race that he rode was the first ride post his collarbone breaking. So, I mean, he literally just sat on the bike and rode that race. After a few months. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to share an anecdote. The first time I saw Jetaram, it was in the Pune Nationals, the first Nationals that we went to, Shetty, Deepu, Chandu and me. And then it was a road race, and Jetaram was a teamless guy that time. He didn't get picked for railways, so he lived in Secunderabad, so he had the option of being part of the AP team. So Jetaram was part of our team, though he never interacted with us much. I think he's also a shy guy. If he doesn't know people. So, and then we saw this guy, and he shared very few words, and even the few that he did, he was very polite. Then the next day, I think we saw the road. The final day, there was the men's road race, and it was held on an uphill section. It was like a U-turn, like most nationals. And Jetaram was solo. He was solo. The race was abandoned in the end, but the few times we saw him, it was magical, because you just didn't expect to see this guy. He's just like a rocket going uphill, and we were handing him water. So it felt like we were playing a part in it, and he would take some water, he would sip it, and the rest he would down. He put the bottle upside down in his jersey on his back, if you can imagine that. So he's actually draining the water down his back, because that was... So I thought, whoa, what a cool guy. I'm going to do that the next time I'm riding. So that's my Jetaram story. And the one time that I beat him in a race, I'm proud to say that I beat him. But the one time I beat him, it was because he thought he already won. And he stopped sprinting. So he will always be a hero in my eyes, you know, no matter what age, no matter where he is, where I am. Jetaram will always be a hero for me.
And he is one of the most versatile riders. I mean, still he goes to nationals, road nationals and track nationals, and comes back with the medals in both. Yeah, right. So he's an awesome rider.
Yeah, and you must have met enough railway cyclists now to realize that even for railway cyclists, this guy is exceptional. He doesn't train because his job needs him to. He trains, I think, because he's hungry at races. I haven't seen that in too many railways guys.
Yeah, and he's a fantastic senior. He is very encouraging of people who are considering cycling. That's a very important aspect or persona of him. That is one of the reasons why I feel so many people love Jetaram. He's always encouraging. He's you know, even in that race, he came back to me and said, you must be doing something because you are riding far better than what I have ever seen you do. Mm-hmm. And I was nowhere near him. So for him to come back and say that was absolutely not required at all. But he had the time and energy to come back and tell me that. So he's a really nice guy to be around. And he's always there to encourage his juniors and tell them things. And he doesn't hide tricks or anything like that. He's very educates his juniors.
Yeah, just to continue the Jetaram appreciation, I'm sure he has an extended family, and you know, people look up to him in his region where he's from, his family and friends, and he sort of takes people under his wing. I know that at any given point he has house guests, because he has told them, you can come and live with me, you can come and train with me, or don't worry about food, this and that. So he does that for his quote-unquote for his people, so to speak, because there's always this north-south divide, right? You know, you always think we're on a different team, but he's not like that, because in the AP academy, remember Sinu and all these guys who would train at the velodrome at Osmania University, and Jetaram was always the big brother even for them. So it was never about what language you speak or where do you come from. You're absolutely right. He's very doting when it comes to these young riders. The one thing though about Jetaram is if you ask him if he's in good form, he'll always say no. If you ask him if he has trained, he'll say no. Kya bhaiya kuch bhi nahi kiya, you know, koi form hi nahi hai. But then you can trust that he'll destroy you any given day.
Yeah, I have noticed that as well.
Yeah.
This was great. We keep going off topic, but about the book again. So where can we buy this book?
You can buy the book with the link that you guys share in the show notes. The first idea was that we'd only keep an electronic copy, but there's also going to be an option to buy the paperback version. And if you want a signed copy, walk into the Bike Affair and Gokul will sign one for you.
So am I allowed to sign it?
That's the Hyderabad guys. You guys can decide how many signed copies of whom you can keep.
Okay, so signed copy from me, who by the way has nothing to do with the book, but will be charged extra. Is that agreed on also?
I don't hear you very well. I think there's some reception problems.
No, do you actually not hear us? Or?
No, I do.
So that is a vague no.
Vague.
Yeah. Okay. Raman, it was great talking to you. I think we've sort of made the podcast into a very informative thing, and I think today became more sort of fun episode, if I may say.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think it's probably because of the fact that we, you know, the chemistry that I have with Raman as well. So.
Yeah, Gokul, it was. It's always. I don't think I tell you enough. It's a real pleasure to work with you. Right from my first memory of working with you, and I hope we can have more projects in the future. This book is just the beginning, probably. I mean, even with remote working, you were really professional and really patient, and it's all you look for in a collaborator, I want to say.
Yeah, I really enjoyed writing this book. I'm grateful that you asked me to co-author, because both of you guys are in the same boat, in the sense that
you asked me to co-author the book with you, and Harsha asked me to co-host the podcast with me. And the first time he did ask me, I was doing a threshold workout on the trainer at the store. And so I think I didn't have my zones correct because I was able to talk to him at that time. So
you're at the end of your something like that.
So I'm really grateful for both of you guys, because I think I just did not have the initiative to or the courage to do this on my own. And I've enjoyed writing the book, and I'm sure we will do more projects like this together. And I continue to enjoy doing the podcast as well. Thank you.
You mean you didn't have the escape velocity?
Yeah.
Right. Thanks. Thank you so much, guys, for having me. I feel really, it's a whole new world, you know, going on a podcast. I never thought this day would come, you know. Feels very special. Thanks for having me and this nice conversation. And of course, thank you for promoting this book.
And when you have, and you, when you meet Peter Sagan, you'll have something to talk about, because he's appeared on many podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. I'll have something in common.
Yeah.